You're now listening to From the Jump, where we keep the convo going with the latest and greatest in hip-hop. With your hosts, Mr. White and Syllable. They tell it like it is.
From the Jump.
I'd like to welcome everybody to From the Jump, your source for all things hip-hop, hip-hop podcast. We got Syllable here and Mr. White.
Yo, how's it going?
And we hope everyone's doing well and been enjoying the interview series we've done so far. The last couple episodes, you saw Mike and I from Freestyle Fellowship, the very MC who coined the term freestyle for rhyming off the top. We had Storm Shadow from Austin, Texas, talking about his career in music. And this week, we're going to talk about the debut album that just dropped recently by Drizzy Drake.
Yeah, I mean, this project right here is kind of a, you know, culmination if you think about it, because, you know, as artists age and, you know, they get to different places in their career, everyone's wondering if they're going to be able to keep up with their track record. And this was no different. It debuted number one. You know, it had a lot of hot singles off of it. And, you know, once again, Drake is showing his acumen for knowing the pulse of the game.
Yeah, this certified lover boy now equaling a record first set by the Beatles 1964 with this new album coming out. And so we're going to review the songs, not every single song, we'd be here all day, but some of the highlights that we viewed on what we liked, what we didn't like, what we think this represents, because it's a journey, as all albums are. And when you have such a career like Drake, where many rappers who have seen their heights have fallen off or fallen into the unknown, where, yeah, they were hot at one point, where are they now? No one knows. Maybe they're a flat earther like Fantastic Bioby. Something happened, and we don't know what's happening. Drake, like Jay-Z, has incredibly managed to stay on top for a very long time period. Mm-hmm. And as a result of this, he's got alliances with so many different major artists, which we see features on this album, with Lil Durk, with Travis Scott, with even Jay-Z on this album. So it's exciting to go through some of these tracks. And, you know, the title itself, I'm definitely going to tell you, I'm not a fan of. I don't even like saying it. But he knows his market, as Mr. White said. And hey, he's making record sales affording his mansion up in Toronto.
Yes. And I mean, the project personally starts off a little bit slow for me. I think we both felt like, you know, he definitely leaned into, you know, the lover boy part of the title name. You know, and it took, what, about five songs or something like that before we get
five songs for
actual rap from Drake. And, you know, it first few tracks are good. I mean, they're great. They're probably for the ladies. You know, Drake has always said that he's never going to go away from making ladies tracks. And this album is no different, right? He's not scared to, you know,
cater to his
audience.
Vulnerable
songs and the singing and the rap singing. He is fully embraced it at this point as part of his style. And then
We got like Get Along Better, Way Too Sexy, which is a cover remake,
yes,
or of a derivative work rather. And then we got In Too Deep with Future, and Future actually does some pretty dope vocal effects there. I really enjoyed what he did. And he was actually remixing some 3-6 Mafia style in some of his songs as well. But what did he do with that vocal effect with Future on that track? I remember you were talking about
it. Well, it's not a vocal effect. It's the production. So basically there was a song from Bun B's previous album. I think it was I'm trying to remember. It was a song that he did. It was him and I believe Young Jeezy. And it was like, mm-hmm, big weed, big money rolling, you know what I'm saying, on the safari gripping grain. Like that beat, the guitar riff in there, he kind of took that and flipped it and made it into an R&B track. I'm going to have to figure out the title of that track. But it was from a, you know, it's like basically Drake throwing that homage to, you know, the H-Town rap that got him on early in the game. And you could kind of hear on this project a lot of influences from his previous projects. He makes references from his previous projects. You could tell that he put this album together almost like a mixtape of his previous works. And that's a very interesting approach to an album this late in his career.
Definitely, because a lot of albums have a thematic approach to it, and this more sounds like, as you were telling me offline, kind of like he took the best of what he was able to do, people seem to respond to, and produce more of it. And, you know, I think you've mentioned this, and I agree with it as well, is that sometimes what happens is, you know, a major artist, they go on tour, you go to their shows, and you don't hear them play the hit songs that you know and love because they want to try something completely different or new approach or experiment. And you're disappointed because, like, I came here for this song. They're known for this song. Why are they not playing this song? So generally fans are unhappy for that. Of course, just, you know, long argument and go on. Who are you making music for? Your fans or yourself? And we're not going to go into that. But the fact is that on this album, this project, Drake clearly catered to the fact that he knows what his audience likes. And he catered to that on different styles on this. And so the first track really was the fifth track that he has some serious rapping on it. And I was like, okay, you actually bringing back some style here. It's not just for the ladies in this sense. And it's not just kind of R&B background noise. And some of his lyrics on here that I enjoyed is, he says, shit is so real, Drizzy Drake, you better than Jordan. Nothing's bigger than OVO, Letterman Boys, cashmere nets for nighttime boat rides. And just the visual imagery there is very, very dope.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that Drake has been able to easily separate himself from other artists with, is his ability to have braggadocio, but, you know, it's relevant to his current life and lifestyle. So it's like, sometimes artists aren't able to get themselves to a big enough plateau to where the stuff that they're talking about is still grand. And Drake has been able to continue to talk about lifestyle things that aren't normal. It's not just about the chains and the ladies and stuff like that. It's like the experience of life, right? And a lot of people aren't going to get to experience. Most people aren't going to get to experience anything like what Drake's life is like.
No, they're not. And it's pretty interesting. And in other episodes we've covered that you can find on iTunes or Amazon Music or Spotify, we've covered actual descriptions of Drake's house and the incredible architecture that he's got done. It's pretty phenomenal. I think the last three bars from that song that, again, we're talking about at this point, Champagne Poetry, fifth track on the COB album, and I really like these lines. Live so much for others, don't remember how I feel. Friends in high places and friends that are high still manage to moonwalk straight through a minefield. When I heard that, I was like, man, that's not only is that visual prowess, but the lyrical content, the punchlines, I like that. That's dope. And the next up, we have Fucking Fans. That was pretty dope. No friends in the industry. Now we have Drake and whatever phase of his career you want to call this. I mean, I don't know. Is it like the...
He believes he's still in his prime.
Yeah.
And it'd be hard to disagree with it, right? This album still debuted number one. I mean, he clearly has a strong grasp, but he doesn't shy away from his rollouts. Like, I watched some stuff... Not that long ago, I think with Wendy Day, she's a famous like A&R, and she just talks about how some artists get lazy as they get more famous in the game and they stop doing their rollouts. Drake had commercials on ESPN. He had all this other fanfare where he was going to the media to make sure that his project is so big. And I think it's interesting where he talks about no friends in the industry. It's basically like, he's not relying on anyone but himself to be successful. And I think that's very true when it comes to Drake. Drake isn't like waiting for somebody to tell him what the wave is. He's going to find the next best artist that's new and popping. He's going to get on tracks with them. He's going to show that he's still relevant in the current music scene. And I think that's something that he's always strived for. And I think it's tough because his career is so big that other artists have eaten off of what he's done. And so this song is definitely about the fact that he feels like he's saying people they're doing stuff to him. They don't like him for any good reason, and it's like that's a kind of a complex that a lot of artists have, right? There's haters everywhere. Haters.
I mean, does Drake expect everyone to like him?
He's a certified lover boy, so yes, he doesn't get it. He's like, why are you so mad at me? But you know, it's a good track.
How many of their girlfriends did he steal?
I don't know.
Why don't you like me? I mean,
yeah, maybe being a certified lover boy can cause you some more issues than you think.
So I think highlighting from this track, which is No Friends in the Industry, is, which of course is not a correct statement accurately. If he had no friends in the industry, he wouldn't be on. But is better find someone else to hit with all that smoke. All them sweets, sorry, all them tweets and posts ain't got time to be playing with you folks. Had to Richard Pryor these N-word, that's the joke. So, if y'all don't know who Richard Pryor is, you need to do some YouTube searching for that. He's a pretty famous comedian and amazing. So,
and I mean, you know, it's some very interesting double entendre stuff going in there, obviously. I mean, you know, hopefully we don't have to break that all down, but yeah. you know, it was good. It was flavorful. And I mean, once again, it highlights why Drake is enjoyable to listen to as a rapper, right? Not just as, you know, the personality that he is.
Right. And so the next track we have is Love All, which surprisingly, so you're listening to Drake in this album so far for CLB. You're getting this kind of first five tracks. You got kind of the background, and even Champagne Poetry, as dope as that song is, it's still more of a spoken word song, I feel, than rather a straight up old Drake rap song. And so then we get to this track, and you're just kind of Drake still in the background. Then all of a sudden, Jay-Z pops on. And that was pretty nice.
It was a solid feature from Jay-Z. You know, he definitely has the history and legacy and the relevance to speak on this topic in terms of, you know, he's saying that people were mad at him because of him going his own way. But he did help out a lot of people before he went his own way. And he's saying that, you know, he mentioned the fact that now people, oh, they were taking shots at him, but now they want to reconcile. And he's like, that's not fair to me because I already helped you guys. You took shots at me and now you want me to forgive you. You know, when I already, you know, it's like the phrase of biting the hand that feeds you. And, you know, when that happens, obviously Jay-Z's probably like, look, man, I don't, you know, like I used to love you guys, but you did me wrong. You know, and yeah, you felt like I did you wrong, but I did so much for you that you should have never felt that way, you know, or at least you should have been able to hold back some of the stuff that you were saying and keep it private. Because
yeah,
we talked about this in our Beefs episode. Jay-Z went through a lot of turmoil with his transition to going to Roc Nation. You know, that was a big deal for everybody in his camp, his crew. You know, he's falling out with most of those guys that he started off with.
Well, it makes me question why they called it Love All. But so
yeah, it was like wait.
some ironic song titling. So I think my favorite bars out of that song is actually Jay-Z's bars on that one. He said, "This ain't the same Sean that you knew once. I don't shine shoes, And he says, N-word, want sympathy after they want to end me. Shout out to the family. I don't want friends no more. Not many understand me. Everybody wants something. You know the price of everything, but the value of nothing." Now that's powerful words. It's actually a quote from Oscar Wilde that he's repurposed in there, which is dope. You know, man knows the price of everything, but the value of nothing. And that's a very, it fits with the theme of the song and his earlier lyrics. It's smooth. He's got his metaphors, and it's got his deep personal connection to his lyrics. And I really felt that was very, very nicely done. Very nicely done. And what's the next song we have up?
We got Knife Talk. So this is an interesting one. You know, every once in a while, Drake tries his gangster stuff. Of course, Drake can never claim actually being a gangster, but he can't claim that no one's ever really bested him, right? And so I think this type of track this braggadocio gangster type of track. You know, he definitely had to get some good features, right? He got 21 Savage and Project Pat. Nobody could question how gangster those guys are. Mm-hmm. They was in the field. But, you know, Drake being on that song is a little contrived. I'm not saying it was a bad song, but it's just like you put Drake in between two real gangsters and you realize how gangster Drake isn't. And it's like, it was good. You know, I like to see Project Pat on a track because he's one of the, you know, the godfathers of the current trap scene. You know, they didn't call it trap music back in the day when 3-6 Mafia was making that stuff. Yeah. But if you go back and listen to it, those are the early goings of trap music, the beat style, the rap style. And a lot of people got their styles from that in this current trap-like era. So I think that, you know, it was a good track. It wasn't a bad track. It just, you know, it's like, come on, Drake. You know, you certified lover boy. So why you talking knife talk, bro? Chill.
Yeah. My favorite lyric out of that one was, I think it was, who came on first? Was that
Project Pat came on first, but I'm pretty sure this line is from 21 Savage.
Baptized more N-word than a reverend.
Definitely 21 Savage.
And I was like, wow, I don't want to get baptized in that manner. But next up, we have Girls Want Girls, which actually got a lot of commenting online, many communities and forums that review songs and talk about hip hop. And the reason why is because of the line that Drake says there, say that you a lesbian, me too.
Yeah, I'm you know, Drake and Lil Baby do their thing on this song. And, you know, to me, it's very tongue-in-cheek, very similar to the Too Sexy song. It's like, Drake can get away with this type of stuff, but people are still going, you know, they're going, you know, really? Lesbian and me too in the same phrase?
In the same phrase.
Yeah. Okay. You know, we're just going to go to the next song.
Yeah.
Nothing else to be said on this one.
So, the next song is TSU. And that it's clearly a song Drake is rapping about a stripper. But it's not your typical song like Juicy J, who, what was that song you really love?
Bands That Make You Dance.
Yeah.
Which is clearly, I mean, do I need to explain the song? If you've never heard that song, I mean, that's cool too. But, you know, that is a certified stripper song. This one's a little bit more like reform stripper. You know, she's trying to change her life.
She's got a side hustle.
And Drake's being supportive. He's like, look, I know this was, you know, you used to be the best stripper in the game. But, you know, you're growing up now. You might have a family. You got some money. You don't want to be a stripper forever.
Yeah, he talks about loaning her money so she can help start up her own business, how her father's not in the picture. And I don't doubt it's a true story. It's interesting, kind of. So you see the different songs, and you wonder, especially with the caliber of some of the lyrics we're going to get to later on, about okay, how much of this is truly ghostwritten? How much of it is truly Drake? And you know, it's a whole conversation. But this song, I feel I can believe Drake has written this song himself.
This sounds like a real life experience that he's maybe experienced more than once.
Right. And so it's introspective. It's a narrative. It's a story song. We don't hear Nas on this, but it's a type of track you could hear Nas rapping about something like that, probably with a grittier feel.
Yes.
and probably more violence. But at the same time, like I like this track. It's good to listen to. And next up, we have a feature for the next track. Is it, I guess, I Am Y2?
Yes.
I'm Y, is it? I don't know what the title is about.
I don't know that either. We might have to look into it. But we have Kid Cudi on there doing an amazing feature. You know, it's always great to see his kind of recovery into the game. Like, mm-hmm. he had really fallen off for a while. And then, you know, the past two projects he's had have been big. And then, you know, he's doing some features again. And then, you know, he has a unique style. You know, we talk about some of these rappers that are kind of like, you know, they're sad and they have solace and they're, you know, kind of talking about depression and stuff. You know, to me, he's a person that kind of fathered that style. And, you know,
As you said, the godfather of emo rap.
The godfather of emo rap, in my opinion. You know, obviously, I don't know if these rappers that are in that style would take on that moniker, but they might, you know, they are definitely more punk and rock esque than they are like pure hip hop. But you know, in my mind, that song that he does with Kid Cudi, it's got a really good vibe to it. I don't know if Cudi worked with him on a production, but it almost sounds like a Kid Cudi track with Drake on it. But it was good. It was good. I mean, I prefer Cudi's singing voice over Drake's, and I mean, when you got Cudi doing more singing than Drake, that means that the track is gonna be good.
Yeah, there was a nice interplay between their trade-offs with their verses and the hooks, and a bridge coming in there with Kid Cudi supplementing Drake's lyrics. It was, the timing was done really well. The production on this is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. That was the first thing I thought of this morning when I started reviewing the album, still hung over from last night. and I was just waking up and I was like, first five tracks, I was like, what is this? This is all some background music. But then tracks like this really stand out for not only the production, but also the quality of the timing, the delivery, and how they play off each other's styles. And so I really like that because Kid Cudi does some great singing with vocal effects on that I enjoy for his albums. I didn't really warm up to him very quickly when he first came out. It was a little too different from my traditional kind of boom bap 90s origin from where I grew up. But listening to Cudi after a period of time, I really started to appreciate his artistry and his craft for this, mm-hmm. this music. And so next up, we have one of my favorite tracks on the album, No Hook, 7 a.m. on the Bridal Path.
So the first thing that throws you off about this song is this the title, obviously, 7 a.m. on the Bridal Path. Let's be clear, like we're reviewing this like kind of after a first or second listen. Like I think I listened to a little bit of the project, but we're reviewing this fresh. So when we heard the title, we weren't sure what to expect. It comes mm-hmm. in kind of soft, you know, very kind of backbeat-esque, you know, that low pass undertone stuff that Drake mm-hmm. likes to do. And then he just raps like mm-hmm. for like 3 minutes. Like, I mean, you know, this is like 88 bars and running type stuff where it's like, I could really appreciate Drake, you know, also giving something for the true rap fans. Like, he just rapped and bar after bar after bar of really intense stuff. You know, lots of metaphors, lots of, you know, double entendres, lots of flipping and lots of multisyllabic rhymes. Like, he crushed it on this track.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with 7 a.m. on the Bridal Path. Like, I didn't even know.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
What that's about. Maybe he was crashing one of his friend's weddings and it was 7 a.m.
I think the previous on the, was one of his albums, he had 7 a.m. in Toronto or something like that.
So maybe, it's 2 a.m. in Dallas, I believe.
Or, I think he has a few of these songs, actually.
Yeah.
So I think maybe this is a reference to that type of song.
That may be it.
Yeah.
But that's so one of my favorite three bars in the 14th track on CLB, 7 a.m. on the Bridal Path, is as far as Drake era, we in the golden ages. If we talk in top three, then you've been sliding the third like stolen bases.
Mm.
Woo! We got them bars.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And, I don't know. Hey, whoever he's talking about, you know, you better... better get it together.
Yeah. Better get Shooters on the Roof to watch the Shooters on the Roof. But next track's Remorse. I didn't really feel that too much. We're not going to go too much into that one. But wow. What do we have coming up next, which is one of my favorite tracks on the album? On the album, it's the 18th track.
You Only Live Twice.
You Only Live Twice.
Very good track. I mean, featuring Lil Wayne and Rick Ross, you know, bringing some of their classic bars, some of their classic vibe to the track. I mean, this is definitely a feature that you could see back from 2010 or something like that. And, you know, you actually have I feel like a vintage Wayne on this track. I mean, some of the stuff that he's saying, and I mean, obviously, Ross has some funny lines in there, but each one of them have kind of a distinct line. You want to kind of highlight those?
Yeah, definitely. Some lines you just, man, they stick out real fast. So Rick Ross starts it off with the first verse and he says, "Bullet wounds ain't covered by Obamacare." So that's some classic Rick Ross there. And then I love it because it's the little things that make you realize we're living in a post-pandemic era, or, you know, at the tail end of it, where, you know, stuff like Obamacare, I mean, when that first came out, it was pre-pandemic, but it takes on a new meaning now after 2020, where everyone's focused on health and wellness and stuff like that. So it adds an extra societal context for him to throw in Obamacare right now and then to talk about bullet holes ain't covered by Obamacare. That was dope.
That was hard.
And then Drake comes in, and this one, I mean, well, first let's just say, you know, for sensitive listeners that are fans of Michael Jackson, you might want to mute this next section. But he says, Drake raps here, "I'm actually Michael Jackson. The man in the mirror is going platinum." Man.
I love that flavor. And, you know, we could argue about who makes better music, right? Because, I mean, that's going to be Michael Jackson all day.
Music.
I mean, he was actually so musically talented that he was able to, you know, compose for other artists on his tracks when he didn't feel like they were doing it correctly. And you know, with his status and acumen, that makes sense. But the reason why this comparison works is because, as far as pop stars are concerned, it ain't too many people bigger than Drake at this time and in this place and time and space right now. And it's like, I also like the fact that he references a track from Michael Jackson, "The Man in the Mirror." You know, he's "I'm looking at the man," or "I'm talking to the man in the mirror." But it's funny because he's like, "I'm looking at the man in the mirror is going platinum." And it's like he's talking about himself, and his self reflection is seeing himself being successful, and that's great. You know, it's fun. It's him knowing who he is, knowing how big of a sensation that he is. And I think that's important to understand the gravity of who you are. And I think he totally recognizes it.
I would agree. And Lil Wayne comes in with a comeback, and
Wayne was going particularly hard on this track. He was rapping fast.
Oh man.
He was line after line.
So he says, Lil Wayne here, he says, "I got bitches doing lines like I'm Adidas." And then he says, he raps, "All my chains are like snakes. That's the real Diamondbacks." And
wow. Yeah, that's vintage Wayne puns. Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't know if I could have come up with this stuff. And it's the reason why it's cool when Wayne does it is because that's the lifestyle that he's lived. Like,
oh, yeah.
If I came up with that line, I don't have no diamond chains. I don't have, you know, diamond teeth. Like, so you're gonna be like, this dude just, you know, he's making it up. But we know Lil Wayne has made a fortune, was into bling. He's pretty much started the whole bling, coined that term, you know, with Cash Money.
Revolutionized whole style.
Yeah, you know, so, and they were always about big money, having high dollar signs, Cash Money, right? Like, so it's like, it's cool to see Wayne on the track and rapping well, right? Like, that's, you know, he's somebody that we thought we might lose early because of his addiction issues, but it seems like he's starting to recover from that. And yes, he may never be as big as he was, but I want to see the legend stay healthy and keep making good music like this, you know.
Definitely.
So it's great to see Wayne and Ross on a track with Drake, and they smashed it.
Definitely. So the last three tracks, we're not going to go into too much detail on. We got Pipe Down, Poppy's Home, and In the Bible. Now, Pipe Down sounds like some typical over-emotional Drake shit. I did like the line, "I was on your ass like back pockets." Maybe I can use that in the club. I don't know. But that was all right. Poppy's Home, I'll be honest with you. Like, what Poppy's Home felt like to me, it felt like a throwaway track from another album that he didn't use, that he just kind of copied and pasted in there. I could be wrong, but that's what it felt like to me.
I mean, I felt like he was trying to, like, you know how people make songs where they're trying to, like, dominate people? Like, you know, he's trying to basically make it seem like everybody is his sons. You know, something that Nicki Minaj says all the time, you know, "All you bitches is my sons," or whatever. And then she also, it's funny because she's on that track talking a little trash. I don't know if she actually had a verse on there. We didn't really make it through it. It didn't hit.
It didn't,
like, he had songs on here that are hitting. This one just, it didn't hit.
Yeah. And then the outro track is In the Bible. Which definitely had echoes of Thank Me Later vibes on that one. Lil Durk sounded great on that track. And we have actually the R&B singer Giveon doing the outro. And it was nice, but it wasn't as smoothly done as it could be. As you were saying, it did feel a little busy.
It was a lot going on there. And also just, I mean, it really screamed outro. Instead of being like, okay, this is the final hit on this project, it's more so like, we're just going to finish this up. This is what we got left over. Let's just throw that on there.
This is an hour and 27 minutes long.
This is a very long project. I don't know. I mean, I feel like this could have been 15 tracks. I would have been perfectly fine. Well, you know, like basically, like we said, it took about 5 tracks to really get into the project to where you're like, okay, this is good fire rapping, good R&B stuff. And then, you know, towards the middle and the end, it's like, and then, you know, those last few tracks are just like, whatever, right? Like, and some people might like all of this or some of it or none of it. But, you know, let us know what you think about this new Drake project. You know, is it trash? Did he deserve the number one? Obviously we didn't cover the issues that he's been going through with Kanye. If you want to talk about some of that stuff in the comments, feel free to talk about that. We had a whole episode on beef if you want to go back and review that.
But what was your favorite track on this album, and what was your least favorite track on this album? Feel free to comment below, like and subscribe, share this podcast with your friends. And the thing is that I think ultimately, replay value wise, I'm definitely going to be coming back to a lot of these tracks, specifically the tracks with features on there with Jay-Z and Lil Wayne and Rick Ross and Kid Cudi. Definitely going to be listening to a lot of those tracks again. And what are you excited about that's coming out next, and what are your opinions of which is your favorite Drake album? So feel free to comment below, like and subscribe. And we appreciate you for joining us for another episode of From the Jump.
Peace.